Conan O'Brien needs a fan. Want to talk to Conan? Visit teamcoco.com/callconan. Okay, let's get started.
Hey, Conan O'Brien here, and welcome to another episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Fan. Usually on this podcast, I talk to people out in the world who have questions for me. I interact with them. Just normal folk, much better than those creepy celebrities. But today is very special. We have two incredible guests, and these people are very important to me, Jesse Gaskell and Mike Sweeney, both terrific Conan writers and the hosts of Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. Now, this season of Inside Conan is going to look back at all 28 years of our late night run, starting from the very beginning, 1993, the first episode, and it's going to feature me, a conversation with yours truly, talking to these two very brilliant writers who know me all too well. They know what makes me tick. They know what enrages me. They've got all the dirt. So this should be interesting. Take notes, because they're going to rip me a new one, I think. Isn't that right? Is that fair to say?
Sure.
I think we let the evidence speak for itself.
Right. Well, first of all, I want to say on a personal note.
We present it, you judge.
I want to say on a personal note, between the, of course, we went through the crazy pandemic, and then our show wrapped up in late June, and I haven't seen a lot of you guys, and so I've really missed you. So it's nice to see you guys again.
Yeah.
I mean that. Jesse, it's nice to see you.
Nice to
Mike
see you.
Mike Sweeney, you and I have been together since almost the beginning of the late night show. We've right. traveled the globe together, and you and I have as well, Jesse, on all the travel shows. So yeah. You know where all the skeletons are buried.
Right. Well, I don't remember a lot of them. That's why we're digging up people who do remember.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God, that did happen.
Yeah. Oh my
God. That's we need another to bury crime. That again. Yes.
You guys are terrible. Yeah. You guys are terrible war crimes prosecutors. You're constantly bumping into me and going, oh, we've been looking for you, but now we can't remember why.
Tell us again. Yeah.
Oh my God, another shallow grave. Oh, wow. Totally forgot it. It's right next to the parking lot.
Yeah. So, but you know what I like is you do this Inside Conan podcast, and you do get people to talk about so much of the behind the scenes stuff mm-hmm. that's happened yeah. On our show over the years. And that is the stuff that so many people do like to hear about, and they like to hear how these shows really work
right.
and probably how people really behave.
Right.
Yeah. No yeah. one would believe it on our show, but
I know.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks your banter is scripted with interns and
right.
yeah. with Sona, but
do they really? No, they don't.
No, they don't.
I mean, some people oh. do, I think.
He's wearing oh, a wire. Yeah. He's getting, someone's feeding him lines mm-hmm. in the commissary.
Can you imagine if I did have a wire in my ear all those years and it was telling me how to react to all my guests mm-hmm. and someone was coming up with that bullshit?
I know.
But no, I've always was blessed with the very, very best writers. I mean, really creative, left-brain thinking writers that would come up with the strangest, silly concepts. And so thank you guys for doing the podcast, because we did put so much work into all those shows. And it's nice that you're honoring that and keeping that craziness alive. And today I thought this would be a great way to launch the new season of Inside Conan, which is for me to be here with Sona.
Mm-hmm. Yay, and, Sona.
Oh, okay. Yay, Sona. I get it. All right.
Oh, you don't get enough? You don't get enough.
Wait, are you? I know. That's a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
Of course he doesn't get enough.
You've heard of
him. He wouldn't be here if Yay, there was Conan. An amount that was enough.
Yeah. I'm doing a podcast after 28 years of being on television every night. Have you heard of a bottomless cup of coffee?
Oh, man.
The name of this podcast today is Conan O'Brien Has Employees. And here we are. You're the best. You're still the best.
Welcome to another episode of Conan O'Brien Climbs Up His Own Ass and Thinks About Himself in the Third Person.
And it... In an echo chamber.
Now, Jesse, I'll let you begin, because my ingrained competitive contempt for Mike Sweeney leads me in your direction.
I'm glad it's finally out in the open.
Yeah. Jesse, what makes the third season of Inside Conan different from the past two seasons? What's going to happen this season?
Well, first of all, I think we finally figured out how to make a podcast.
Right. Sweeney takes
and
a while.
I yes. have finally stopped talking over each other every
day. Except for right now. And we figured out an arc. I think the first season, we were literally like, we need to record.
We were pulling in like the janitor as he walked right. by. Like,
someone who put cookies like down in the green room. Do you have 2 hours to spare? You know, we would just go and talk. But this year, we're like, oh, let's start in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you announced that you were ending the TBS show, there mm-hmm. was this huge outpouring and all these articles written, and people were sharing a lot of old clips from Late Night and just from your whole 28 years on TV. And so we thought it would be cool to start from the beginning and really do it as a retrospective mm-hmm. season and talk to people from everywhere along the way. There's a lot of folks we still haven't talked to yet on right. the podcast who have great stories and can really kind of set the scene of what it was like in those early years. And
I you know, what stuns me, I think, the most is that people will bring things up to me that they saw in 93, 94, 95, and I don't know what they're talking about. Right. And when they describe it, it sounds completely undoable. Yeah. And then I'll realize we did it and that... and
well, have you ever watched the show? You'd like it.
I like the host. The host seems needy.
That's crazy to me because you remember the weirdest stuff that happened years ago, but you don't remember a lot of the comedy you did.
Well, there was so much of it. We did, I think, all told, well over 4,000 hours.
So that would be like maybe two or three sketches a night. That's an insane amount of sketches.
Yeah, and it really is the equivalent of if you had ate three different kinds of sandwiches or different kinds of food a day every, 5 days a week for 28 years.
A lot of blood.
And then someone saying, remember that time you had that sandwich that
was extra mustard?
Yeah, there was extra mustard and three pieces of rye. And you go, no, I don't. And then, only it's not three pieces of rye. It's, remember what the time you and Leonardo DiCaprio were dunked in hot cheddar cheese. Right. You'd think I'd remember that, but I don't.
I would think you would.
Yeah,
would
he was terribly burned. I remember that's why he never came back. His face mm-hmm. was awfully burned.
That's why,
That's why he's worked very little. You could see in The Revenant, the reason the bear attacks him is that he smelled cheddar cheese on Leo DiCaprio's skin and attacked him. Yeah, and you can see him peeling
the
it off.
The real bear,
I remember that stuns me. The other thing is I think young people or younger people, and they shouldn't know this, but it's ancient history to them. So they'll see things online, but most people don't know how angry the show made people when it first showed up because, mm-hmm. And it's funny because younger people seem to like the show, but so many people who tuned into, this is back when literally there's like three, maybe four networks and I'm one of three talk show hosts or four talk show hosts, late night talk show hosts. And people were so mad at this weirdo, his weird show. And so.
But it's also getting used to somebody new.
Yeah.
I remember early SNL where they, like Bill Murray, like who's this guy? You know what I mean? It's like you have to get used to these new
right. And it
faces.
It takes a while. But there was also, add to that, there was a lot of anger about the way that people felt Letterman had been mistreated and he went in.
Right.
And I was filling that slot. And
right.
Who do you think you are? And I mean, literally, I used to go into restaurants and people would say, who do you think you are?
Wow.
Ever think, wow, thank God there wasn't social media back then?
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to look at it. But there was something called newspapers. And and I remembered very clearly going to talked to a therapist and I said to the therapist, people hate me. They think I'm not good at what I do. They think I'm a phony and that I don't belong in my job. And my therapist did what therapists do and said, listen, these are negative thoughts. Mm-hmm. They have no basis in reality. Mm-hmm. You're creating these negative thoughts because you have these bad feelings, but they're just thoughts. They're not real.
Not facts.
No one's real. They're not facts. They're just thoughts. And I said, no, I'm quoting from the cover of USA Today. And I like showed the therapist.
Did you have it?
It was so funny.
They made a pie chart about
it. Yeah. And
it's all black.
It was just so funny to be talking.
100% hatred.
It was so funny to be talking to a therapist and have them go, please, these are just thoughts. And I went, no. This is the Wall Street Journal. See right here, Conan, no good at his job. He should go away. Wouldn't it be great if he died?
Most hated man in America.
Yeah.
And now let's move on to periodicals.
Yeah. And and I could laugh about it now. At the time, it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. But it's nice too. I wouldn't change a thing. I really wouldn't. It was just such a, all 28 years was such a kooky ride. And I'm so, just when people come up to me and say, I remember the show where everybody was skeletons. And I'm like, what?
That's right.
You know, like, I can't believe we got away with this. I can't believe we did these things. And
that was a Halloween special.
Yeah. And we got a very young, brand new Bill Hader to do the opening of the show. It was a Halloween show, and he did a great Vincent Price. I don't think I had met Bill Hader yet. One of the funniest people ever.
Yeah.
And I remembered asking, oh my God, the opening of his show has the most amazing Vincent Price voice.
Uh-huh.
And they said, oh yeah, it's this new guy on SNL, and he volunteered, and he was a fan of the show, and he did this great favor for us. And then, of course,
well, he got paid.
he got his $180.
But yeah, that's the other thing, is there are all these famous actors and comedy performers who got their start on your show.
Yeah.
In some form.
Yeah. We had, what's one of the funniest things is that we had a sketch. I don't know. I don't think it was the first season, but we used to do fake guests. Right. And we wouldn't tell the audience. So it was so meta. And we would trick people into thinking, I remember one week.
And you'd introduce them with the music and the band.
Oh, yeah, everything. So,
very straight intro.
So one of the things we did was Monday, we'd do the show. And at the top of the show, I say, this person's going to be on, this person's going to be on. And of course, author of the book, our civil liberties, justice thwarted or whatever. Yeah. Josh Memick will be on the program. And then we'd do the show and I'd go like, we didn't have time for Josh Memick, but we'll get him on tomorrow. And then we did the Tuesday show. And I, again, plugged him up front, very seriously, very serious title of a book. We got to the end and I said, we didn't have time again for Josh Memick. My apology to him, but we'll have him on tomorrow. We did that again Wednesday. Then we did it again Thursday. And then Friday at the end of the show, I say, I'm so glad we have time for him tonight, Josh Memick. And this guy comes out who looks just like an author, and he's got a book that's got a serious title, and he sits down and he's livid. He's furious. He's so angry. And he's an actor that we hired.
Right.
And the whole thing was scripted. And I'm like, so Josh tells us, he's like, now you have time to talk to me, huh? I came here I sat in that green room and he rips into me and loses it. And the whole thing's a joke. So many people watching at home just thought, first of all, they hadn't seen Monday through Thursday.
Right.
We were doing this inside joke for the one person in the world who had seen all. That was the level of minutia.
But for that one person. Seriously.
Yeah. But
I would be like,
oh, no. I was always a believer and still am that God's in the details, that you put these little things in there. And I learned that from SCTV. I think still one of the greatest pound for pound sketch shows of all time. Catherine O'Hara and Marty Short. And I don't want to go into naming everybody because it'll take forever, but just this incredible cast of Ben John Candy came from SCTV and Joe Flaherty and Dave Thomas and, Rick Moranis, but this amazing show. And they would put these little things in there that were just if you were paying attention.
Little Easter eggs. Yeah.
And this is before I even, people called them Easter eggs. It was just, they cared enough to do that. And I learned as a young teenager, adolescent, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Care enough about the people watching that you put those things in there.
And things would show up again several episodes later.
So we did a thing where we announced that one of our guests, and again, very serious, was this young girl who had won the National Spelling Bee competition, and we talked to her, and then we brought her out, and it was an actress we hired, this young actress who was fantastic. She was great. She really committed to it and fooled the audience. And the whole joke was that she's a terrible speller. Right. We were having her spell words and she didn't get any of them right, but she was so good. And it was, I don't remember her age, but I think it was like a 12-year-old Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so this is just, those are the kind of people.
Yeah.
We also had the Upright Citizens Brigade was brand new. Mm-hmm. And so we had, you know, Amy Poehler anytime, you know, would come in and play Andy's sister.
Yeah.
Who had a crush on me and had this giant
headgear
on and had a crush on me. And then Andy would always, and she had, it was kind of inappropriate and creepy. And Andy would always sort of say, come, that's not really good. And I'd say, yeah, I really, you know, it's not going to happen. And then she would become enraged and give these amazing speeches. But I'm thinking about the firepower we had. And these were
and she was in a million. She was on the show maybe 4 out of the 5 days. A week, along with
and I just look, I just think Walsh. how blessed we were, Jack mm-hmm. McBrayer and as you say, Matt Walsh and all these people that went on to become, you know, showed up on everyone's television and they're famous in their own right and they're huge stars, and you just think this is hilarious that we had these people and that they would come in and do this amazing work for us. Yep. We were so lucky.
Yeah.
Just, it was a great time in New York mm-hmm. and a great time for comedy and a great time to be in Rockefeller Center and just be able to pick up the phone. And some of the coolest people would come in and do cameo, little cameo things that were incredible.
Because they lived in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Joey Ramone or just.
Oh my God. Wow. The time we had Joey Ramone of the Ramones doing a cameo walk-on, and then he hung out backstage.
Right.
And then we always had a post-mortem, which is we would meet after the show. We did this throughout the whole run, all 28 years. We'd have a quick meeting after the end of the show.
In your dressing room.
In my dressing room, we'd go through, this worked, how come that didn't work, what happened there? Yeah, sorry, the camera forgot to, you know. We'd go through what went right, what went wrong. Joey Ramone came in and sat down and sat there during the meeting. He was just sitting there because he thought
he had some notes.
He just was wanted to know what was up. So Joey Ramone's sitting there and he's dressed like Joey Ramone, jeans, leather jacket, the sunglasses. And he's sitting there and we suddenly were just like, we're not going to have a meeting. Right. Let's talk to Joey Ramone about what it's like to be Joey Ramone.
Yeah.
And he had that thick accent
from Queens.
And he was sitting there and we were just like, well, Joey, forget the show. Tell us like. I remember saying, "Where are the fans the craziest?" And he was just, I can't do his accent,
right.
But
just you know, you can barely understand.
And he was like, "Oh, South America, they just go crazy in South." And he was talking about South America and how there were certain countries in South America where they were bigger than the Beatles, and they would go down there and do a stadium, and then they would get in their van, and people would be shaking the van, so. You know, he's telling us all about what it's like to be Joey Ramone.
Right.
And that trumped anything.
Yeah.
And speaking of Trump, that was a guy who used to do, that was a guy.
What a segue.
But he was someone who would just do bits.
He would do anything.
He would do anything on our show. And we would literally have things like, can we get Dr. Joyce Brothers to do this ridiculous bit?
Right.
You know, where she steps in some fake plastic poop. No, she said that's beneath her. All right, try Donald Trump.
She recommended Trump.
I'll do it.
He's already there.
I'll do it. Yeah. And he used to do all these bits for us. And this is, anyone now would say, but Conan, how could you? And I'd say, he was a guy that did bits on our show.
He was a great extra.
Part of his climb.
Yeah. And what did we know? We didn't know. And he used to do, I remember he did the new Trump edition of Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Right.
And he did the voiceover and it's like, it's Conan O'Brien like you've never seen him before, right. Trump style, gold-plated desk. Yep. You know.
And we had a fountain. We put a big color fountain in front of your desk.
And he voiced over. And he did the voiceover.
The idea was he bought the show.
That he bought the show and gold-plated put all this stuff on it. And so it all seemed like funny, foolish nonsense then, and of course now it's got a, you know, when I tell people that guy who now has literally half the country at his beck and call,
yeah,
and is maybe the end of our Democratic experiment, was an extra on our show. Was an extra on our goddamn show. I don't understand what happened.
It could have been him or Joey Ramone could be president. It could have gone either way.
Why couldn't Joey Ramone become president?
That would have been great.
It's now mandatory you wear a leather jacket.
I didn't know whether to run for president here or in
Venezuela.
Exactly.
I don't know. It was, I mean, that's why I've always thought I'm disconnected from that guy. Whoever that guy was, I have a picture. You've seen
this
picture.
I love calling him that guy, by the way.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm not being...
It's probably the best way to go through life.
Yeah, I'm not being facetious. I'm saying I don't, you know, it was so many years ago.
Yeah.
And I was so, that when I talk about that version, whoever, that 30-year-old kid, I was 29 when I auditioned and got the show right after my 30th birthday. And I remember at the time thinking, well, I'm 30. That's old enough to have a TV show. And now I meet 30-year-olds and I'm like, you're way too young.
You're a child.
Right. You're a child.
That is really young.
And I look at, there's a picture that Annie Leibovitz took of me that where we put a sandwich board on me where I'm looking for help with my new late night show. Mm-hmm. And it was taken in April of 93 and it's in Times Square. And you can look it up online, I bet. And I have that picture in my kitchen. I don't have any other pictures of me like around the house, but I have this picture that I hang up because it's such an amazing picture. And I look at that guy mm-hmm. and I look at him and he looks, I was had just turned 30, but I look about 17 and I look at him and I think he's got this kind of sweet smile. And I think you have no fucking idea. Cause this was before the show started.
Right.
Yeah, you have no idea
what's
what you're
in. Store?
You have no idea.
No one warned you.
Yeah. How could you be warned? There was only one way to find out. Yeah. So, and I look at that guy and I go, I have a lot of affection for that guy, but good Lord, he's about to, he's going
to
step
in.
Yeah. But it was,
Then help groom a future president. What an arc. Yeah. What an arc. Well, you know, speaking of Jack McBrayer, we just spoke to him.
Yeah.
And he's a bit of a record keeper. He sent us a document of every appearance.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
On the show.
Yes.
I believe that, too.
Yes.
And he was on 78 times.
Oh, my God.
You're all here. And then at the end, he made a list, and we're probably going to post this with the episode, ways that I've died / been abused. It's a list of all the different ways he was killed or maimed in sketches on the show.
In sketches, not in real life. Like,
There might have been some carryover.
I Jack was always money in the bank, and this is before before 30 Rock.
Yeah.
We used him and so no
2002
one knew,
he started.
No one knew who he was, but he was just this hilarious and is a hilarious performer. And we would, use him in all these different ways. And I always would do this improv where whenever Jack was around, I'd be the kind of cruel, callous city slicker.
Right.
Who was like, well, Jack McBrayer. I knew I smelled, horse manure. You know, did you muck out the barn? And he
No, I did not, sir.
Yes. And he is so, Jack is so good at going with it. He'd be like, sir, that is wrong. I am not, sir, that is, and he would really commit
to
it.
That's offensive.
So I would commit to my guy.
Right.
And he would commit to his guy. And what I didn't know is that the crew was watching all this.
Right.
And they thought it was real.
Yeah.
So, I love Jack, but literally Jack would be at the double doors waiting to rehearse. And I would see him out of the corner of my eye and I'd start sniffing the air going, way. Sounds to me like somebody just came fresh from the hog farm. And he'd be like, sir, I most certainly did not.
And what if I did?
I came from my condominium in Midtown. I'd be like, did you get scared about the elevator, Jack? That moving box? I did not, sir. I know perfectly well what an elevator is. And we would do this. So at one point, we would just do this and we would really commit to it and neither one of us would break. And I remember one time I'm walking out and there's a couple of members of the crew. Mm. cameraman, they're standing around, and a sound guy, and they're like, can we talk to you for a second? And I said, yeah. And they went, you know, Jack's a really good guy, and you're pretty rough on him.
Wow.
And I said, guys, I love Jack. And they're like, well, if you love Jack, maybe you really... And I was like, are you... No, no, no. Jack, come here. Yeah. Like, tell them. And
His deadpan's just too good.
His deadpan was so good. And
it'd be great if he was like, thanks, guys.
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. I have. It has been.
Well, I've been waiting for someone to intervene the whole time.
Yeah. So he, what happened was, and this is something like you guys, I think, can attest to, which is that I don't.
I don't have boundaries,
but I also don't segment things, meaning comedy is not something that I do when people are around,
right?
And it's time to do professional comedy.
Right.
My thing, whatever you want to call it, good or bad, is happening all the time.
Uh-huh. Right, yes.
So, and I just did, because we had to wait to even just to do this podcast, right. And we were out, and I had I just have socks on here at the Earwolf Studios, and there's a smooth cement floor, and I'm dancing around and doing different characters.
And charging all of us like a bull.
And charging all of you like a bull, and acting like a total ass, not acting my age or anyone's age at all. I mean, a four-year-old would be disgusted, but this is what I do all the time. So I have, Jack will text me something and I'll text back, like just as it's Jack McBrayer and we're friends. Right. And he'll text me something like, hey, you plan to have your Christmas party this year? And I'll go, well, you know, and I'll be texting him back and saying things like, the problem is if you bring the mule, you know, everybody's going to want to bring a mule and we can't have a mule at the Christmas party. And he'll text back and say, it'd just be one thing. No. And I'll be like, come on, Jack. And he'll type back like, this is wrong. This is wrong what you're doing. And he'll commit to his thing. And it'll be, sometimes it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And I'm chuckling and doing this city slicker guy from like 1911. And he's doing his thing. And it's for nobody. It's for nobody. It's madness.
Just for the court record.
Well, it's for the people at Apple reading your texts.
Yeah, exactly.
He's with Jack again.
Well, we have a really fun. I shouldn't put this
like, oh no!
God.
Whenever
never
someone
mind.
Says something,
never mind.
It's like when the dentist says, "This won't hurt."
No. Nope. Yeah.
We have a really fun.
Let's
thing.
Wrap it.
Yeah,
up.
Let's stop having our really fun let's conversation and get to this.
No.
I'm serious. We can do whatever you want.
Sure. Oh boy.
Let's try it. Let's see what goes.
That shift in subtle shift in your voice. We can do whatever you want.
Uh-huh. Let's see.
Absolutely. It's your podcast.
He's licking his lips right
whatever
now.
Whatever you guys want. Mm-hmm.
Well, we know you'll have quizzes on your other podcast, so we have a.
I won't know anything.
That's
what's going to happen. Like, so I know that someone probably thought, let's ask Conan if he remembers these things.
I want to see.
But let's try it.
No, but we have been talking.
You already
about
admitted
it.
That you don't remember most
right.
of
yeah, yeah, let's hear
comedy
it.
You've
let's
done the show. So we just wondered, based on the titles of these sketches, if you would be able to describe them.
Okay,
or
go.
Or
try
just
to
guess.
Go. Yeah. So these are really we're on.
These were on the
these
show.
These are the titles from
I
the.
I completely understand. Everything that
okay.
you said,
this
and
is,
it, we really need more explanation.
These were really on.
We're just
so these were actual sketches.
We're trying to fill the time here. Okay.
So we'll say the name of the sketch, and then you. Okay.
I'll tell you if I remember it.
From 1997, Naked Goat.
Nope, no idea. What's Naked Goat?
Because of rating success of Pamela Anderson Lee doing SNL monologue naked. We thought we'd try something. Pamela Lee's dad, Burton Anderson, comes out, disrobes, groin pixelated. This makes our ratings go up. So now we present a naked goat eating with groin pixelated.
Jesus. You guys are.
Oh my God.
This is just going to lead me to believe that our show sucks.
You're going to
well,
ask for a gun. What have done.
I was thinking so fondly of our show. All right, keep going.
Oh, I love
one
it.
One of these will be funny.
Oh boy. The Wilcox brothers?
Oh, no. I vaguely remember the Wilcox brothers. Just give me a little more.
Conan gets interrupted by Andy's whining. Well, that doesn't help.
That's called Thursday.
Andy's tired. He didn't take his nap. It's okay because Andy Richter, well, this is going to give it away, is played by the Wilcox brothers.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, it's this. So apparently,
you're allowed to look up good sketches. You don't have to do.
I'm going
to
move.
You don't
on.
Have to just pick these ones that are these. Oh, no. Were these funny? Were they good?
We didn't even watch them.
Oh, great.
We liked the titles.
This is like an autopsy where they find out that the person died 700 different ways. He was shot and he had cancer and someone shoved a cannonball up his rectum. Go ahead.
Voldemort versus Mary Poppins.
Nope. Oh.
2012.
Okay.
That doesn't matter.
But does that help?
Well, I kind of remember that
do
one.
Do you?
Yeah.
It was part of the UK Olympics.
Sona, what do you think it was?
Never mind, I don't remember it. Okay. You said UK Olympics, I don't
it's
remember
it's a matchup
it.
Of Voldemort versus Mary Poppins, two uniquely British characters. Uh-huh. The two figures are fighting live with Voldemort beating the crap out of Mary Poppins when suddenly Tiny Tim appears, apparently to help Mary, but then he just helps finish off Mary Poppins.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just getting depressed.
Oh, man.
You know,
no. These are funny. I'm laughing.
No, I'm sure. Look. I'm convinced. I'm sure some of this was good. I mean, we did some really amazing stuff.
We did. You're probably saying, why are we?
No. I mean, I remember the things that stand out to me is I remembered we once did a week where we were pretending to travel through time.
Yes.
And you were part of this, Sweeney. We built a giant Trojan horse during the Greek period. The night where we were doing, it was all Greek.
Yes.
And I was wearing a toga. And we pushed this giant and had built a giant.
We actually talked to Bill Tull about it.
Yeah, and Bill Tull. So he built a giant real Trojan horse and they were pushing it through Manhattan and we timed it so that a giant truck would go smashing through it right outside Letterman's studio and smash. And it looked amazing. And our first guest that night who was watching all of this backstage was Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
And Martin Scorsese came out. And, you know, I talked to him, and then during the commercial break, he was like, "Hey, I got to tell you that the thing with the shot, the Trojan horse and the truck, that was really well shot."
Wow.
And I was sitting there in a fucking toga getting a compliment from Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
And so there was just so much.
Yes.
But I'm sure you put a lot of work into picking these ones.
We did talk to Bill Tull about the Trojan horse because he had it made in New Jersey. Bill Tull, our prop master.
They circumvented union rules and made it in New Jersey so that it would be ready in time.
Well, it's good to reveal these things now. After there's got to be a union statute of limitations.
Oh, yeah. He admitted, I'm surprised the building wasn't shut down with the crimes that were committed in the prop room.
Yeah.
We used to attempt pyrotechnics on our show all the time.
Oh,
and yes. I swear to God, there was no names or anything.
No
it's
names.
Just that things were done very quickly, maybe not with an eye towards
codes, the word codes.
Various codes, safety codes. I'm just surprised. I'm shocked. We were blessed. We were blessed that we managed to do, especially at 30 Rock. When we came out to Los Angeles in 2009, you know, people have been making stuff here in Los Angeles for, for 80 years.
Right.
So you'd want a special effect and, you know, but sometimes we would want something or need something in 30 Rock.
And it didn't exist.
Yeah. And we'd find someone in a deli and say, can you make this thing blow
up? Right. Yes.
We'd go to a shoe store. Anyway, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. He also told one of my all-time favorite stories about, I don't want to give it away, but the time we took down Live at Five's nightly broadcast single-handed.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were building shelves.
Yeah. I said, do you mind talking about that? He goes, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. That's I remember that very well.
Yeah.
They broadcast the local news that all of New York watched across
live
the hall
five.
From us, Live
right.
at Five. And it's how Manhattan found out what the hell was going on in Manhattan.
Right.
So it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And Bill Tull decided to put in some shelves.
Yes.
And I think he took a big, he didn't consult anybody and took a giant electric saw and cut through the wall through a cable. And no one in Manhattan.
Like, these cables must not be
anyone,
anywhere.
Anyone watching Live at Five, the whole feed went out all across Manhattan. And it's because our prop master wanted some shelves.
Yeah. He did it at 4:30. And it was the wires that connected them to every reporter in the field.
No, I mean, you know, it's funny because I've had people say to me, are you ever going to write a book? And I think I have to. I know that I have to write a book about all the things that happened. But I'm going to need a lot of people to help me remember everything that happened.
Well, you should also listen to Inside Conan.
I'll do that.
You know about the Wilcox brothers. Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be in the I don't think they're going to make it into the book. They'll make it into the supplement.
They're not even making it into this podcast, let alone your book.
Do you remember this sketch?
Who brought up the Wilcox brothers? I want to know. Anyway, go ahead.
No. I just
it's too much.
There was way too much that happened that was, and I think some of the beauty of that, especially that first year of the show and 2 years, is that we didn't know any better. And there's a beauty to not knowing any better. When you mature or get older, not that I matured, but we started to learn some of the boundaries. But in 93, especially 93, 94, we were trying to do a Saturday Night Live every night.
Right.
And we would have these ideas, and Robert Smigel, who's so brilliant, would, if one thinks of it, then it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we tried so much stuff that you just wouldn't try. I mean, I wouldn't try it now because I'd be too scared.
Yeah.
We did a thing on the show, I think that first season, where we did a whole thing where, and I'll never forget this, we created like a hospital drama that had, and this is all done in front of a live studio audience.
Right.
And live to tape, but still, you have to get it right the first time. Mm-hmm. We had a whole audience, and what we would do is, it's a hospital drama, and we got Martin Sheen to be the doctor.
Oh, wow.
Martin fucking Sheen. And then I'm in it, and Andy's in it, and we're also doctors, and there's like, and what would happen is, we would have actors who were wearing green screen things over their faces, and what we would do is we would suddenly cut to someone in the audience, and their head would be on that actor's body, and they had to read the line.
It was called sit in the seat theater.
Sit in your seat theater. And it basically meant that, and suddenly we just hold up a card.
Yeah.
So what you were seeing was, this person just came to see a late night talk show. Like, oh yeah, Letterman's not here. That's too bad. They got this new guy. I hear he sucks. Well, I don't know. It's raining out and no one else is coming in to see it. Let's go check it out. And they're watching pretty much this play and this scene, this like 5, 6, 7 minute scene. And Martin Sheen is there having this intense conversation. And we would just put someone in the audience's face into the scene on that actor's body and hold up lines for them to say. And suddenly they're doing a scene with Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
And it somehow worked. And I just really remembered at rehearsal thinking, we're all going to die. and there are just hundreds of thousands of crazy things like that happened that are, we're just, they scare me now thinking about them. It's like when you're older and you remember the time that you, I remember the time I got on a motorcycle and I, I just had never been on a motorcycle before. So I tried to jump over a bunch of milk cartons and you're more afraid later on.
Right.
Yes.
I'm terrified now.
Yeah. I know. I mean, it's really, it's been so fun to talk to people about those early days of, you know, when it really felt like this energy of people who had nothing to lose and just going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very obviously indebted to, we gathered a really good crew, a merry band that no one, I was the television professional because I had worked on Saturday Night Live and The Simpsons.
Right.
No one else I hired had worked in television. And Robert and I were the only, we were supposed to be the adults and we weren't. Good God. I'm really glad you're doing this. And maybe I'll drop back in again because I love talking about this stuff.
You remember a lot too.
Yeah.
I think once we get, no, I do remember that. It's just that I can remember a lot. It's when you bring up specific things.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And I will tell you this very quickly, which is when the great actor Jerry Orbach passed away from Law and Order, I remember thinking, I said out loud to somebody at the show, my God, I love Jerry Orbach. He's such a cool actor. And I wish I'd gotten to do like a scene with him. Mm-hmm. And people said, you did on the show. And I said, no, I didn't. I would know if I, what are you talking about? I said, I love Jerry Orbach. I idolize that guy. I wish I had done a scene. And people were like, you did. Yeah. I may, and I'm like, no, I didn't.
Great.
I got into a big fight.
They walked out of the room.
It was your bit. Yeah. And so Mike storms out of the room. Mike comes back with one of those giant bricks because it's a different era.
Right.
It's a VHS tape that's like 19 pounds. And he shoves it into the machine and he presses the button. And I'm on the Law and Order set, and Jerry Orbach is right in my face grilling me, and I'm refusing to talk. It's good cop, bad cop. And I had no memory, and it chilled me to the bone. But I will listen to this because I'll learn a lot. Listen to Mike and Jesse on this new season of Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast on Team Coco. Wherever you get your podcasts, listen, because it's probably a really good instructional audio tape on how not to do things.
Including a podcast.
There's a link in the episode description that will take you to our interview. And thank you both very much for doing this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Really nice.
This was fun.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Fan, with Conan O'Brien, Sonam Avsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Music by Jimmy Vivino. Supervising producer, Aaron Blaert. Associate talent producer, Jennifer Samples. Associate producers, Sean Doherty and Lisa Berm. Engineered by Will Beckton. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This episode was produced and edited by me, Brett Morris.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.